Hi, everyone. You're listening to Pharmacy Focus Oncology Edition, where we bring you the latest trends in the oncology pharmacy space. I'm Alex Gerlach, and I will not be the host for today's episode. We are celebrating American Pharmacist Month and have a few of our pharmacy experts to do a little takeover of our podcast and this episode. Today, we have Drs. Ryan Shaw, Sarah Ann Scott, and Kelly Julian to discuss BCMA bispecifics and CAR T-cell therapy, with a specific mention of idecabtagene viclucel, or Ide-cel, and siltacabtagene autoleucel, or Siltacel. So, without further ado, I'm going to pass it on over to our pharmacy experts.
All right, I suppose I'll get things started. My name is Ryan Shaw. I'm a clinical pharmacy practitioner at the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill. And today we have Dr. Sarah Scott, who's a clinical pharmacy specialist in multiple myeloma at Emory, Winship Cancer Institute, and Dr. Kelly Julian, who's a heme and BMT supervisor, RPD, clinical pharmacy specialist in multiple myeloma at the University of Utah Huntsman's Cancer Institute. And today we're going to talk a little bit about bispecifics and cellular therapy in multiple myeloma, and specifically on the sequencing of all these different T-cell therapies that we have. And just as kind of an introduction of why I think that this is pretty interesting and significant is the landscape of multiple myeloma has changed a lot over time. For those of you who are old like I am and have been practicing in the myeloma space for a while, you may remember in 2015, we had four drugs approved just in that year, and that created a bunch of conversations about how to sequence all these new therapies, and then it didn't slow down. And so we've had 11 therapies approved since 2019, including four bispecifics and two chimeric antigen receptor T-cell therapies. So this begs the question of how do these all fit in with the treatment kind of algorithm in multiple myeloma? And so that's what we're going to talk about today. So given all of this evolving kind of landscape that we have in multiple myeloma, where do we even start when we start thinking about bispecifics versus CAR T cells? And I think that's the first question I'll pose to you guys.
Yeah, I think, Ryan, I think that's a really good question and a hot topic in myeloma that the conversation is changing around as we get all these new therapies is this rate of attrition that a lot of people talk about, that with each line of therapy, you have less of an opportunity to treat patients. So I think with that in mind, the first step is always thinking about what's best for the patient right now. And a lot of that takes into consideration patient and disease factors. So thinking about both the pros and cons when we think about bispecifics and CAR T. So starting with bispecifics, I think a lot of this has to do with access and availability of therapy. So bispecifics are off the shelf. They're ready to go. So if you have a patient who's rapidly progressing, you may not have time to wait for that manufacturing process that we have with CAR T. I also think access to these is going to get greater and greater in the community setting. So right now, both of these therapies are really only available for therapeutic initiation at large centers that are specialized centers who know how to deal with the weird toxicities we see with these. But as community providers gain comfort level with them and we're able to kind of build outpatient programs for bispecifics, I think that access is going to expand. And then we know that there is a better tolerability profile. So although we still see the risks of the T-cell redirecting toxicities of CRS and ICANS, that risk is lower and the severity of those toxicities is lower. So maybe for your older patient who's borderline frail, they still need a T-cell redirecting therapy, maybe this is a better option for them. And we're also not seeing those delayed toxicities. So the delayed neurotoxicities like Parkinsonism, we're not seeing the enterocolitis that's been popping up with CAR T. So things to think about. But from a CAR T perspective, I think a lot of practices are still, if we can give CAR T, we should. At least that's how we practice. So we know that there's a higher overall response rate with the CAR Ts and potentially longer duration of response as we get more long-term follow-up. I think the CARTITUDE 1 follow-up really sells that as well with the Siltacell and late-line therapies. We also know it's a considered right now, one and done. I think that conversation's changing a little bit as we talk about maintenance therapies, but for right now, it can give these patients maybe a treatment holiday in patients that with myeloma who don't really ever see that when they're given a chronic cancer diagnosis. And then I think there's also infection risk considerations with both of these therapies. So with CAR T, that infection risk is early. With bispecifics, there seems to be some data that it falls off after 1 year, but we know with that continuous administration of this therapy, that infection risk is always present. Other kind of cons, I guess, to think about. So the ongoing therapy, not only is there continued infection risk with the bispecifics, but there's more and more data, including stuff that was shared at IMS, showing that there's induction of resistance mutations with ongoing therapy. So I think until we get fixed duration data that can maybe solve some of those problems, another thing to really think about. And yeah, I don't know, Kelly, if you have any other thoughts about the two and comparing and contrasting the two products.
No, I think you hit the nail on the head. I agree with everything you said completely. I think there are still questions that are unanswered. And this is kind of an ongoing discussion that we're going to have for the next 5, 10 years.
Agreed.
As we, I mean, thinking about what you said, so if we start people on bispecifics, because those are kind of like off the shelf, are we limiting the efficacy of CAR later down the road or vice versa? Is there a sequencing order that matters?
Yeah, so I'll take a stab at this since Sarah set us up so nicely. Thank you, Sarah. We do have emerging data that the recommended approach is that if you can use your, in myeloma specifically, your CAR T first, that is preferred, and that the recommended interval between anti-BCMA bispecific antibodies, if you need to use those prior to CAR T, should be at least 6 months. We've kind of joked that the 6 months is a magical number. And again, we see this evolving. This is really based on kind of right now expert consensus and minimal real-world data. And why is 6 months kind of the reason if you have to use that BCMA bispecific before the CAR T? What are we worried about? We're thinking about T cell exhaustion, and that could lead to T cell dysfunction, which would reduce the efficacy of that CAR T therapy. There's discussions about BCMA antigen modification. So bispecifics can cause downregulation or loss of the BCMA expression, which could ultimately impact CAR T targeting. And then we think about CAR T manufacturing concerns or the T cell quality at the time of leukapheresis that could be compromised if bispecifics were used more recently, leading into that leukapheresis. So there was one study published on this that did a retrospective review of 52 patients that both got ide-cel and cilta-cel. That was published earlier this year. So 52 patients, not a huge cohort, but that magical 6 month number kind of came out of the median time between the bispecifics and CAR T in that study. We also have some real world evidence looking at cilta-cel. If you think about CARTITUDE-2, Cohort C did allow prior BCMA treatment, whether that was with a bispecific or an antibody drug conjugate. And they saw that factors that were associated with reduced response to cilta-cel were shorter duration between the prior BCMA therapy, whereas improved outcomes were seen with longer median time between prior BCMA and leukapheresis. We have some data with ide-cel, where they saw similar outcomes as seen in the registration KarMMa trial, but they did see like an inferior objective response rate that was associated with things like presence of extramedullary disease, prior BCMA therapy, and penta-refractory disease. So I think the general numbers that are being thrown around with some of the data that we see here is that there is a lower overall response rate, closer to 60% in patients who received a BCMA-targeted therapy prior to CAR T, compared to like an 85 to 95% response rate in BCMA naive patients. So again, the general recommendation for sequencing there is to use CAR T first when feasible, but we know that's not always the case.
Yeah. And I think if I remember right, too, it was the patients who had the inferior response with prior BCMA also had an inferior response with the more cycles of BCMA therapy that they received. So not only like BCMA first, but the more BCMA bispecifics that you receive prior to CAR T also seems to negatively impact your response to CAR T down the road. So not just like time frame, but also like kind of quantity of cycles that you've gotten is probably negatively impacting people if we sequence it that way. But all that being said, I think it's really a real world issue as far as access goes. So, when we're talking about availability and what therapy to pick first, I guess, how does access factor into that conversation?
Sure, I'll take a stab at this too. So I think we largely think in two buckets, right? So community versus academic medical centers when it comes to access. And starting off, community centers may lack certain infrastructure or trained personnel for administering cellular therapies. They often rely on standard regimens and FDA-approved therapies with more manageable side effect profiles just to get the patients on and going. And they also do serve more rural populations, underserved populations that could face barriers like transportation, that limit access to the therapies that are available at larger academic medical centers. I think that access, you could talk about this for an hour, right? You could tailor your sequencing based on the patient and its comorbidities, social determinants of health, high-risk patients. And it's really about the relationships that exist, which I know there's a big push to publish the relationships that academic centers are trying to form with community centers and trying to get quicker access for patients who may be having a more rapid progression and need the cell therapies and the infrastructure that are available. I will say it's not wrong for a community center to give a bispecific if they do have the infrastructure in place. While they're waiting for the consult to come through from the larger academic medical center that may be working on getting the CAR T dominoes in a row, that takes many, many weeks and lots of time and resources. So I'll pause there and let Sarah add her 2 cents.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think the other piece that at least comes into play with us, because we do a lot of this in the outpatient setting, is consideration of caretaker. And that's something that no matter where you're located can be complicated. We also are running into more and more insurance barriers. And so I think access is a huge problem. And as we get more things into this market, I think we're also going to start seeing formulary preferences and we're going to see other barriers from at least from a pharmacy perspective that I'm not necessarily looking forward to. But I agree. I think access is a huge conversation. I know as Kelly and I both attended a piece of the IMS meeting, the Allied Health piece, where they talked a lot about access to these therapies, and we heard from international communities and their access and what that looks like. And it's not something that's going to get easier anytime soon.
And this is a little bit, we didn't prep for this, but have you guys seen any changes in access or referrals with the changes in the REMS program? Are we able to get more people into your specific centers with having that kind of like lessened requirement?
At least for us, I've heard mention, but it hasn't changed anything. Because I mean, I think it gets brought up in the feedback we get from our community partners is like the lymphoma bispecifics, for example, don't have a REMS program and they're still fearful of initiating those. And kind of like I mentioned before, I think it's lack of familiarity with these toxicities. And we always joke, like, you guys give Rituxan like water, and you used to be really scared of rituximab. So it's things that with time hopefully will get better. But at least I'm not sure about you, Kelly, but we haven't seen change with the change in the REMS program.
Yeah, I can speak to the same as they pulled back some of the REMS requirements for CAR T. And we talked a lot about it, and it's still like we treat who we treat, and we treat absolutely anyone that's clinically appropriate. And so we work out the logistics around the REMS specific to CAR T, and that we've been working really hard with community partners on the REMS with the myeloma bispecifics to kind of change the narrative. I think that's kind of what Sarah was alluding to. It's a necessary evil, and we have to do it. And we handle it. And I think there's a lot less trepidation around the REMS now.
Well, maybe there's space in the future then for getting people access once we break some of those barriers down. When we're still thinking about specifically these therapies and sequencing, though, are there certain patient groups or patient factors that influence the choice of therapy or which therapy you pick?
I have an interesting caveat here. I know we talked about this previously a little bit in our pregame session, but essentially we do give still certain patients ide-cel. So we know that there's better efficacy endpoints with cilta-cel, but it's like what's the niche here for ide-cel? And we do give that for older, more frail patients. as a trade-off. If we're concerned about side effects, they've got like a strong neuro history and we're worried about the Parkinsonism thing. We have a lot of conversations around that, especially patients who are older and, you know, they're super happy with a year of you know, no treatment for their disease because they're in their mid to late 70s. So we do look at comorbidities, disease, infection risk, frailty, all of those things, and we are trying to find a good niche for all the therapies we have available.
Yeah. Do you see in real, sorry for interrupting. I think Sarah was about to say something, but do you see in kind of real time any differences in manufacturing time? Does that ever influence your decision to go to IdaCell versus Cilta-cel? Either one of you can answer. Sorry, not just Kelly.
Yeah, I can't think of the last time we used IdaCell, so I defer to Kelly on that one.
IdaCell is faster than Cilta-cel, by a week or more. But that I don't think that is the main factor that's hinging on the decision. Typically, the patients who were sending to IdaCell have time to wait. If it's more rapid progression, then the conversation changes.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay.
Yeah, I agree. And I think even though we haven't used it in a while, like when we were, and there's more data being coming out about this, I think a lot came out at IMS about the importance of disease control prior to CAR T and the efficacy of CAR T and the safety of CAR T when you have better disease control. So I think people are going to get bridging no matter what. So we've actually, even in rapid progressors, we've delayed CAR T up to like a month, knowing, you know, it's manufactured, it's ready to go, but we want disease control before we give it to get the best bang for our buck. So I think that's another consideration. And when we're talking, you know, sequencing, I think in kind of three buckets. So similar to Kelly, I think, you know, Cilta-cel we know has the longest, best overall response rate, longest PFS. But, you know, Ide-cel has a good niche for those patients who do have, we are going to give it soon to a patient with dementia. So it's a great, like, you know, patients a little older, they have dementia, we already have neurologic concerns. But then you also have that third bucket of patients who still need a T-cell redirecting therapy. They might be too frail for the concern of like severe CRS or, you know, have really severe cardiac comorbidities or something that CRS could get bad really quickly. So bispecifics might be the better option for that patient. And so taking all those things into consideration.
Yeah, it's not an easy decision to make. There's a lot of factors that are moving pieces that are very patient specific. But again, the exciting news in multiple myeloma is we have a bunch of new products. So, and some are BCMA targets, but some aren't. And so, as these new things come out, and some of them already have, like talquetamab, where do those fit, or where do you see those potentially fitting in this sequencing of therapy with bispecifics and cellular therapy?
Yeah, so talquetamab, we love it. We love to see it. We love to use it, especially as bridging therapy. And I'll just put a caveat here really quickly that bridging therapy for those listeners that maybe aren't as familiar is the time after apheresis or leukapheresis, but prior to CAR T while we're waiting for that manufacturing to occur. And then holding therapy is kind of the therapy pre-apheresis, pre-CAR T, or pre-apheresis or leukapheresis that you're trying to get that disease control that Sarah was talking about. And there's nuance there to the decisions that are made about the treatments for holding therapy versus bridging therapy. And what we're seeing are drugs like talquetamab kind of get into the forefront because it has have a different mechanism, and we're trying to avoid those things that I talked about earlier, like T cell exhaustion and target deregulation. So for talquetamab, it is a bispecific. It is a GPRC5D target. And we have now evidence that's been published recently by the Multiple Myeloma Immunotherapy Consortium, actually this August in Blood. Over 20 centers contributed, and they found that talc bridging was feasible and safe, and that this alternate target was ideal because the side effects were manageable. Mostly grade one and two. There was for CRS, and all safety signals were what they kind of had known and were previously predicted. There was 2% grade three ICANS. I was rereading it last night, and I was like, "Was that from a patient?" I think maybe it was, but it could just be my own bias. I hope it wasn't ours, but they did see that talquetamab was effective in allowing rapid disease control as a bridge, with minimal toxicity and did enable a transition to CAR T in 119 out of 134 patients. So if you're doing the math, that's like 89% made it to CAR T. And this population, again, real world, heavily pretreated, and we're often trial ineligible patients. So I think that's a super important option that we have in our toolkit.
Yeah, we've started doing this quite a bit too. So we're with you.
We have a shameless plug for our ASH abstract looking at this as well. We similar results. I mean, we had 100% response rate, so all those patients were able to go CAR T. And I think something with talquetamab, we also know and love it. Its toxicity profile is extremely challenging, and we all know that. And I think one thing with the bridging is that we saw 100% toxicity resolution after talquetamab discontinuation. There's not a great timeline for when that's occurring, but we know that patients are recovering their taste, their skin is healing. And so those concerns that are with talquetamab as far as long-term therapy seem to not be as much of a concern with the bridging, which is great. I think talquetamab as well, something that we talk about a lot is the toxicity profile is a little different. So we have those on target off-tumor toxicities with the dysgeusia and the skin changes. But from our perspective, we've used this before BCMA-directed therapy in patients who have like a severe infection history, because we know that the infection risk is less with these GPRC5D targeted therapies than the BCMA. And then we've also used it in patients with really profound cytopenias that are maybe not as disease related. We know that the BCMA cytopenias can be really bad. And so we've reached for this before BCMA product in quite a few of those patients as well.
Are there other therapies kind of that are on the brink or that you're kind of excited about that are maybe not yet FDA approved that you're looking forward to, I guess?
Teaser.
Yeah.
So the two that come to mind for me are cevostamab and belantamab. Was approved and then got taken off the market, and now we're patiently waiting again. Cevostamab again is a different target, so FCRH5. This is an intravenous T cell engager that has that unique target. We saw in their phase one trial with 160 patients who had relapsed disease. At the highest dose level, it yielded a 55 objective response rate, with the main toxicities being very manageable, grade one CRS neurotoxicity. We are a center who's participating in the CAMA 2 trial. I think some of this data was presented at EHA recently, and that the response rates were higher in the prior to CAR T cell group. So we're looking at like a 73% objective response rate, and VGPRs, again, they were small numbers. They had like 11 patients in this cohort, but VGPR was around 55%, compared with the prior ADC group, which was closer to 20% and only 10 patients. So interested to see more how that data kind of matriculates and matures over time. I do think cevostamab, in the few patients we've put on that drug, have done really well with managing their side effects appropriately. And then switching gears to belantamab, which is an antibody drug conjugate, humanized IgG1 monoclonal conjugating antibody with MMAF, which is a microtubule inhibitor that does induce cell cycle arrest and apoptosis. So I think that the niche for this is ideally after CAR T. And or in CAR T ineligible patients. It is being explored as a maintenance therapy post-CAR, especially in high-risk patients. So we look forward to seeing that data come out. But the two combinations that are talked about mostly right now are the belantamab Velcade dexamethasone from DREAMM-7 and the belantamab pomalidomide dexamethasone from DREAMM-8. And both showed deep responses and high rates of MRD negativity in high-risk multiple myeloma patients. But again, you have to think back to what we talked about previously. If you're going to use this prior to CAR T, it could compromise efficacy there. So I'm looking to see this more in a maintenance, more salvage regimen type framework. What do you think, Sarah?
Yeah, I agree. We also are very excited about belantamab. We were one of the centers that loved it early. So we're excited to see it come back. I agree with you. I think CAR T ineligible is a great space for this. I think it's also a great community access therapy for BCMA therapy, especially in that second line where we hopefully will see the approval based on DREAMM-7 and DREAMM-8. I also think it's a T cell sparing therapy. So we talk a lot about like what do we do after CAR T, after bispecifics when these patients, you know, they might have been on bispecifics for the last 4 years if you sequence a BCMA and talquetamab and their T cells can't do anymore. And so I think it has a good opportunity there as well, which is not necessarily what the label's going to say. But I think it's something where we're looking forward to using it. And then we actually have an IIT with belantamab, pomalidomide, dexamethasone in the post-transplant maintenance setting for high-risk patients. And this was presented at IMS and showed that at the 2 year mark, none of our patients have progressed. And so, we're pretty excited about that and hoping that that trend continues as we continue to enroll those patients. So, that's another space that hopefully, you know, if they get a fixed duration after transplant, they get an extended break. And then in that second line, we can introduce CAR T or bispecific if we get that approval in the future.
Yeah, and I think the if I remember right, the PDUFA date for belantamab is later this month.
October 23rd,
Yeah.
supposedly.
Yeah. After it got delayed from July, I think, to for concerns over ocular toxicity and kind of underrepresented patient populations in the US. So, I think it's got a storied history, but I do think it has a place in therapy, so we'll kind of see what the FDA says hopefully later this month. For cellular-based therapies, though, there's several that are knocking on the door of approval. So what ones are we looking forward to in that space?
Yeah, I think there's kind of three big ones that I think of that are going to be hitting the market sooner rather than later, hopefully. The first is anito-cel, and this is the next kind of BCMA to market. What's unique about this is its structure. So it has a different, it has a D domain binder rather than the single chain variable fragment we see with the other two products. So this smaller domain is more stable, it has a faster off rate, and all of those things are theorized to contribute to increased efficacy as well as improved safety. So at EHA this past year, we saw the phase 1/2, like most up-to-date data readout, and the overall response rate was 97%, which is, you know, in line with cilta-cel. And then the CR SCR rate was 68%. There was a lot of CRS, 83%, but basically all of them were low grade except for one unfortunate grade 5 event. And then ICANS rates were low, so only 9%. So kind of more in line with that bispecific rate of ICANS, a little bit higher, but not near what we're seeing with the other agents. And then I think most importantly with this product, they're not seeing delayed neurotoxicities or the delayed the enterocolitis or other things that we're seeing. So as we get more long-term follow-up, I think this one will be exciting. And right now the phase 3 trial is currently enrolling. The second CAR T that I'm excited about is the GPRC5D directed CAR T, arlocel. So this is enrolling to both the phase 2 registration as well as the phase 3 trial right now. We've enrolled a few patients on this and it seems to be quite effective. At IMS, they displayed their first kind of data readout. Overall response rate was 94%. And at the 1 year follow-up, the overall survival was 100%. So I think this is, you know, an alternative target. We talk about sequencing all the time. This would allow patients to get maybe another CAR T, depending on how you want to sequence it. And I think really notably with this, I mentioned how talquetamab's toxicity profile is so challenging, but it looks like the on-target off-tumor effects here are much lower and less severe. In the patients we've treated, we actually have not seen them, but it seems to be the dysgeusia and the nail changes are occurring in about a third of the patients and skin changes occurring in about a quarter of the patients. So there's also high efficacy in both BCMA naive as well as BCMA exposed patients. So kind of considering for both of those populations. And then the last one is this has been on the conversation docket for a while, but the allo CAR Ts. So I think this is something that's being explored where anywhere CAR T is approved as like earlier access and quicker access to an off-the-shelf CAR T product. I think also similar to belantamab, when we talk about T cell health and a non-T cell or kind of a T cell sparing therapy, this isn't dependent on the patient's T cell health. And so if they've had prior exposure to a CAR T or bispecific, we don't have to worry about the health of their T cells because we're bringing in this allo product. And most importantly, here, when we think, from our transplant brains, no GVH has been reported with this product in the myeloma setting. So that's something that I think is really important as well.
Yeah, that kind of like that concern about manufacturing time and an off-the-shelf product and rapid progressors and things like that, that potentially is a cellular therapy answer to those things that may be otherwise pushing you towards bispecific. So I know it's been kind of a desired product for us in the cellular therapy space for a long time, but hasn't quite made it yet. So that'll be very, very interesting. So ASH is coming up, and we talked about some other new products. Is there any other data that you're looking forward to about ASH, or any other clinical trials that are reporting early information that has you both excited?
I think I'll speak in broad strokes here about some of the data that we've talked about in our circles and are excited about. Whether or not they're presented to ASH, I'm not sure. But I know there's in all of the emails I've been on with the consortium, there was an unprecedented amount of abstracts submitted to ASH. So, congratulations to anyone who was selected to be a poster or a presenter. I think the EPIC trial is worth mentioning. So, this is a phase two trial with the intent was to utilize consolidative therapy post standard care ide-cel with elranatamab. And so, from the KarMMa trials, we know that although the majority of patients respond, the responses are not durable. We've kind of alluded to this previously. And so the goal is to deepen the response post ide-cel and with the aim of improving progression-free survival. So this phase two trial waited until day 100 and then started elranatamab and then continued that through day 160. They did have an update that was presented at IMS that Sarah and I were both at recently last month. The initial results presented discussed 16 patients, so again, small numbers here, that have shown that the consolidation with ELRA did improve response rates. They observed an increase in stringent CR and VGPR rates and also increases in MRD negativity with the strategy. I do think this is where we're headed. We've, a lot of the attendings I work with discuss some type of post-CAR consolidation in our high-risk patients. So I'm looking forward to seeing more of this and similar other data be presented. And then the other piece, I know this is already published and is even in the NCCN guidelines, but the redirect one with talquetamab and teclistamab, we have started to do this in my practice. We've done it on two patients. It wasn't perfect. They weren't these two bispecifics weren't ramped up simultaneously. They were essentially already on talquetamab, and then we added in the teclistamab. But really interesting here option for again trying to get at those high risk patients, especially those with extramedullary disease. This trial enrolled 93 patients, including 34 in the recommended phase two dose, and all of them were heavily pretreated with often mostly triple class refractory. And that what they noted was that the side effects were manageable. Hematotoxicity was primarily neutropenia. There was a low rate of febrile neutropenia, even though there was neutropenia seen in over 60% of patients. But the talquetamab side effects that Sarah had mentioned previously were all still there and present, low grade. But the one thing that kind of stuck out from the redirect trial was the incidence of grade 3 and 4 infections that was higher than what was previously observed with either therapy alone. And so the question is, how do we get the dosing right to try and prevent that? Are we, needing to space things out and do things a little bit less frequently, a little bit sooner? And that remains to be seen. But again, good overall response rates, 86% in the recommended phase two dose, and the median duration of response was not reached. So in this, especially in the extramedullary patients, I think this is a viable option. Look forward to more data there, especially in the real world.
Yeah, and I think a couple other, in the line of sequencing, like we're talking about, is there is a lot of data coming out with these therapies in earlier lines, particularly in the frontline setting. So one example of this that, gets a gasp every time the data is presented is the Majestic 5 data that shows like 100% MRD negativity for newly diagnosed patients when teclistamab is put in combination with the standard daratumumab and lenalidomide in the front setting. So I think that's something that we're going to see with all the bispecific antibodies, and something that long-term follow-up is going to be very telling, but we may not see for 10 years, which is the beautiful and challenging part of myeloma. And CARTITUDE-6 is another one that I think could really change the landscape of myeloma. So this is comparing consolidative therapy for newly diagnosed patients of autologous transplant versus cilta-cel. And I think there's a lot of ongoing conversation of if autologous transplant is needed for these patients. And I think this could be very interesting to see. Again, maybe 10, 15 years before we find out the answer, but something that I think we're going to start to see some data read out for soon.
What would be the three bullet points that you would kind of hammer home for people who maybe didn't listen to the entire conversation or were distracted by, other things at work? If we're going to do some take home points now.
I'll just start and just give my main one, which is that we have an exploding pipeline. We're very fortunate to have lots of real world data coming out in the realm of bispecifics and sequencing with CAR T. We do know that ideally, if you could do CAR T first before a BCMA directed bispecific, that does portend better outcomes as far as efficacy is concerned. However, sometimes that's just not feasible given the patient's type of progression and their access capabilities based on where they're being treated. And with that, I'll leave Sarah to hammer home the rest.
So I think, yeah, moving forward, I think there's going to be a lot more data coming out of this. We're going to get different approvals for these therapies, which is always going to affect sequencing as well. So a lot to look forward to, a hot topic, and not stopping anytime soon.
Love it. Well, I think that's where we can leave it. I do want to say some big thank yous, first of all, to Dr. Scott and Dr. Julian for being here and doing this today. Also, thank you to the American Society for Transplantation and Cellular Therapy for kind of bringing this together and plugging us in with this opportunity. And most importantly, to Pharmacy Times for recording this and publishing the podcast. Definitely interesting talking with you both. And obviously, this is relevant and an exciting space to be practicing in. So I really appreciate your time.
Well, that brings us to the end of our Pharmacist Takeover episode. A huge thank you to Drs. Ryan Shaw, Sarah Ann Scott, and Kelly Julian for joining us today to discuss BCMA bispecifics and CAR T cell therapy. Another big thank you to our audience, as always, for listening in and supporting Pharmacy Times. Stay tuned for our next episode, and I'll see you in the next one.